So just so everybody knows, this originally was proposed as a core conversation. I don't know if you guys are familiar with those, if you've been to any of those. It's where people in the room get together and actually talk about the topic at hand instead of just listening to somebody stand up and say some stuff about social media or whatnot. So I am going to, I guess everyone's pretty close to the front, and there's nobody in the last row, so that's good. And I'm going to talk for like 10 minutes, probably, and then we're going to actually have a conversation about photos and about what it means to be taking photos these days, the fact that everything's digital, and what that actually means for us as creators of content, and also for some of the people in the room, I assume, who are people who are producing or making services that, you know, have things to do with photos and photography and digital storage and whatnot. So that's where we are right now. I just wanted to get everyone sort of excited and ready to talk, because otherwise we're going to be really bored for like 40 minutes at the end when nobody's saying anything. So is everyone cool with that? Yes? Yes? Cool. Okay, great. So, a bit of intro. That's me. Who am I? I'm Jesse. I'm Jesse Chan Norris. I'm at JCN on Twitter if you want to tweet about how awesome I am or about how not awesome I am. That's fine. I run a music company in New York City called Indaba Music, but for the purposes of this talk, I'm a photographer. And I have been taking photos for about probably over 10 years now, which isn't really that long, but it seems like sort of a lifetime. And the most interesting thing about that is that means that I was taking lots of photos and doing a lot of photography before the advent of digital photography. So a lot of the first photos I was taking were all film. And this is a conversation that that I wanted to have as I started to think about what happened when I went from taking film photos and started doing all this digital work. So so then first of all, this is not a, like, I hate film talk, because I love film, and as Alex knows over here. So I really do love film. The first camera I ever took pictures with was a Pentax Spotmatic, which is this very old, really lovely film camera. As like, the only thing electric in it is the light meter. Everything else is manual about it. And I really love everything about it. I love the quality of the pictures that come out of it. I love the process of taking photos with it. But over time, it really became less and less practical to take all these photos with film, especially as digital cameras got more and more awesome. And so I started, about 8 years ago, I got a digital SLR. And so now I was like, okay, sweet. I've got this digital SLR. I'm taking lots of digital pictures. And that is totally awesome, right? Because everyone knows, like, digital photos, digital cameras are great, right? Because it's really easy to take lots of photos. It's really easy to store lots of photos. It's really easy to share lots of photos. Like, these are all really good things about digital photography. And that was fine, except that as I started taking more and more of these photos, and they lived on my hard drives and lived in my, you know, like lived in Flickr and lived everywhere else, I was like, this is actually kind of a problem, because digital photos have this problem that analog photos, film photos don't have, which is this problem of persistence, or at least what I think of as persistence. All right, so let's just, for example, what do I mean by persistence? Well, let's say somebody were to say, tell me about 1928. Right, like I'm talking to my my grandparents. I'm like, tell me about 1928. Well, I actually found this photo. This is not anyone related to me, but I found this photo in a box in Spitalfields Market in London. And there's just a giant box of photos, and this photo was in it. And on the back, it just says August 1928. And it was just there. And you can get sort of, you can get a sense of what's going on there, sort of. But you sort of see what it looks like. This is if you think about 1928, we're in 2012 right now. So, you know, 90, let's round up. Let's say that's like almost 100 years ago, right? That's a very long time for this to still look as good as it does, right? What about a digital photo, right? You say, okay, I've got a digital photo. Well, let me give you an example. This is the first website I ever made, or at least it's on that. I don't actually know what it looks like anymore because I can't read that thing. For those of you who don't know, that's a floppy disk. No, it's not. You're right. Yes. We can have that discussion later. But so this was 1995. So less than 20 years ago, I cannot read this disk. I don't have anything that reads it. I think it was probably on a Mac, but I'm not really sure. And okay, so this is a real pain in the ass because I do have that website somewhere. It's on a server that I keep up and running. But it's a lot of work to like keep this stuff up to date, to make sure that it's always readable, to make sure that like I can always make sure, like this again. We didn't have to do anything with this to keep it around. So as a slight aside, or maybe not really an aside, but maybe the cloud to the rescue, right? Like the cloud will save us, right? Because we can just put things in the cloud, and it's great. It like takes care of the format problems. It kind of takes care of the backup problems. You just like shove it up there, and you kind of believe that it's always going to be around. That's not really the case, as probably we all know and all think about, right? We've got a couple of very there are two examples that I want to talk about very quickly as we think about the cloud and putting things online and taking your content and shoving it up online. One is a case of incompetence, and one is a case of just sort of the natural progression of things as they happen online. So I don't know if anyone remembers Sidekick, which was a cool little device, like a little portable device, like a BlackBerry or iPhone or whatnot. It was a company called Danger, and I believe it was at Microsoft that had all of their, that you synced everything with Microsoft. Microsoft ran it, and so you had this device, and it was really cool because all your photos, all of your photos, our contacts, everything stored online and in your device. So it was always backed up, constantly backed up, until the day that the Sidekick system crashed. And Microsoft was like, oh, we don't actually have a backup of all your stuff. Sorry. And it was all gone. Like, everyone who had a Sidekick, who had it synced up to this Sidekick cloud, their stuff was just gone. So that's an example of, that shouldn't have happened, right? Okay, well, fine. They made a mistake. Okay. There was another case of GeoCities. I know that there's some people from, that's a different story. But with GeoCities, if there's anyone familiar with GeoCities, so GeoCities was, for those of you who don't know, GeoCities was a web service for a while there. I think it was the second or third most trafficked site on the internet. It was huge. It gave away free websites to people, right? It ran sort of in the early, mid-90s. Yahoo bought it at one point. And then a couple of years ago, Yahoo decided, we don't really want to be in the business of hosting free websites and all these sites that we have. We're just going to shut down this service, right? So people who had said, oh, well, I have this free web space. I'm going to put stuff online in this free web space. Maybe it's a lot of photos. Maybe it's text and whatnot. Yahoo is just like, oh, we're done with this, right? And I bring up these two things because right now we do something very similar with services like Facebook, right? You think about Facebook. Facebook is a free photo album for you, right? It's free. It's great. You can just upload everything to Facebook until you realize that maybe one day Facebook's going to say, well, you know what? We don't really want to be in the photo business anymore because there's this really great graph, which I unfortunately don't have, which is like number of photos uploaded to Facebook compared to like uploaded to every other service out there. And the Facebook square is this thing that's like this big, and the next largest photo, like the largest box, is like Flickr, and it's like this, and then there's Library of Congress, which is like even smaller. So Facebook has a lot of photos, right? All of our photos are up on Facebook. But we don't pay them for it, and people might say, it's free, you get what you pay for. But that's not actually how people think about Facebook and not actually how people think about the photos that they put up online. So it's this notion that you don't actually, you don't actually control that. It's great. It's great for sharing. It's great for getting your information out into the world. It's great for sharing with your friends. It's really bad for sort of this long-term trust of this system because you don't run it. It's not yours. You don't own it. You can't touch it. If whoever is running the service decides that they don't want to be in that business anymore, they can just shut it down. And they don't really owe you anything before they do that. So why are we talking about this now? And why did I start thinking about this now? And I really started thinking about this now because it's only been within the last several years, maybe like 5, 7, 8 years, where this is actually much more of an issue and much more of a problem. And by this, I mean everything we do being digital from start to finish, right? It used to be, even when I had my first digital camera and I took a lot of photos, I would still actually end up printing out some of them to share with people because there just really wasn't a good way to get them out to all your friends. Like, half your friends weren't online, they didn't have whatever service, photos were just too big to transfer efficiently over the internet. But now, bandwidth is so cheap, social web, everyone knows about social everything, right? You'd like post a photo and now, 50 of your closest friends are going to see it. And I think that now is the time when we have to start thinking about, okay, so we know we can do this. We know we do this every day. What does this actually mean? What does this mean for the photos that we're taking? What does this mean for the memories that we're keeping online? What does this mean for this persistence that I talked about before, where we start from, I'm cool now. I can send out photos to all my friends now. I can probably show them to my friends in a year from now. 50 years from now, I'm not really sure about what happens. 100 years from now, I don't really know at all. We know what happens 100 years from now with a box of photos, right? So as I think about this, we think about all the things we gain from digital photography, and it's great, right? Like all the things that I mentioned before, it's very fast, it's cheap, The effort, it's interesting, right? Because we rarely think about what we lose, right? We think about all these gains. What we lose is the effort required to shoot photos, right? We lose, it just gets pushed down to almost zero. The effort required to store photos also gets pushed down to basically zero between how cheap hard drives are and how cheap online storage is. It's basically free to store everything you've got online. What we do, however, lose is now if you think about this third component, which is what I think about is curation, the effort to actually curate, the effort to actually think about what it is that we're taking pictures, to think about actually what it is that we're saving, that effort actually goes way up, right? So what we've lost is this built-in curation, this built-in choosing at the time of making a photograph of, making that choice and saying like, well, this thing was important, this thing was not. I'm going to take this photo, I'm not going to take this photo. I'm going to save this photo, I'm not going to save this photo, which I think is a very interesting thing we should be thinking about. One thing that is interesting with digital photography though is like the moments. There are still some moments in our lives that we actually do still curate, and these are all like the important, what we think of as important moments, right? So weddings. Everyone I know who got married in the last however many years, everything was shot digitally. The wedding photographers all had their 1DX or whatever, and they're like running around taking all these digital photos, and they have like thousands of digital photos, and then they go through and they actually pick the right photos and they make a book or they make prints and they send these things out because this is an important enough moment in these lives that they say, okay, we want to actually curate this. We want a bundle of memories here surrounding this thing. Births, very similar. My question though is, what about those other moments? Right, the other moments are what I call the everyday moments, right? Where if somebody says to you, well, tell me about what 2012 looked like, right? The only thing that happened in 2012 wasn't that like you got married or you had a kid or whatnot. There's the day at the office when you're just like hanging out. And, is that something worth preserving? Is that a memory worth preserving? Maybe to you, maybe to somebody else down the road? It's just something to think about. And is it worth considering these moments, not the weddings, not the births, things like that, as these 100-year memories? And so I thought was particularly striking. This was a project done by an artist named Eric Kessels. It was called Photography in Abundance, and it was in a gallery in Amsterdam. What he did is he took all the photos uploaded to Flickr in a given day, one day. He didn't actually say which day it was, and he printed them all out. So this is just one corner of that room, and he just like shoved them all in a room. And if you look at that, this photograph says two different things to me. And they're sort of two opposing things, which I find very interesting. The first is that this is sort of an example of this like abundance, right? Again, as you said, like the photography in abundance. It's there's so much stuff, right? There are so many photographs in this picture that you look and it's just representative of the total influx we have every day of these photos and these images in all of our lives, and Flickr and Facebook and all sorts of social media. The other half of this, though, that I do find interesting is that if you were to walk into that room and you were to pick up a handful of these photos, you would have those photos, right? And you would have these memories, and you would have these moments from these people's lives. And what you did with those photos could be up to you at that point. But you could keep them, and you could put them in a box, and you could save them for 50 years, and you could show them to your kids, and you could say, look, I went to this gallery, I picked these things up. These were on Flickr, they were digital, but like I chose these because they meant something to me. In a way that you couldn't do if you just snapped a photo of the room or looked at a picture of this on the internet or in my presentation online, which I find particularly interesting. Again, this is sort of all a lead-in to this conversation because you look at this picture and it is sort of unnerving because there is just so much there. But I do actually think that it's not a good thing or a bad thing. It could be either or it could be both. So that was like my lead-in. That was the intro piece of it. And I did actually want to have a proper conversation about this because I think that it's very interesting. You're all here because you clearly have been thinking about this either as content creators or as people that run services or as people who have an interest in digital photography or anything like that. Thanks for listening to my rambling at the first part. I want to just sort of start the conversation. I can seed stuff, but if this like inspired anything, feel free to speak up. And Carla, hi. Stand up and speak up. Do you want people to use the mics? Okay, sorry. So there's a mic, and apparently we should be all using the mics.
No, I was just saying that I sometimes feel like my life has been reduced to a CSV file. So there's been a couple services that I've used that have shut down. And at the very end, it's like, oh, but you can download your personal information into this lovely digital format that will work anywhere. So I have all these files of myself. But the reality is what I'm losing is the interaction that I had with other people on those services. And then I think to myself, well, it's great that I have all this ephemera about myself. Mm-hmm. But whoever finds it later and pulls it out of the digital shoebox of where I've left it, what do they get to do with it? What can they discover about me as their mother, their grandmother, their great-grandmother mm-hmm. by looking at this file of stuff from this website that I downloaded in 2008? So that's the thing that I think about as I sit here and listen to this. It's not just photography, but it's all these other things too, and that we lose the interaction because any photo that was in that pile of Flickr photos mm-hmm. could have had somebody, it could have been somebody's birthday, or it could have been, there might have been many special moments for those people involved. So I wonder, what is it that we can do with these things to make them more useful to people in the longer term as well?
And there's a different, and I would also say that I think that's really interesting because that is one thing that you can get and might not get from an actual box. And what I'm going to do at this point that leads me to a very nice segue. I'm going to pass out. I have a box, and I printed out a bunch of photos, and I encourage you to peruse the box. These are all my photos. These are all my memories. But feel free to take a photo, something that speaks to you maybe. You can keep it, you can not keep it, you could throw it out later, you can use it as a bookmark. But I encourage you to keep it for like a year and rediscover it at next South by Southwest when you're opening up your suitcase and you're like finding your like South by Southwest t-shirt pile and you're like, oh, look at that thing. I remember that day. The interesting thing about this notion of like, you know, the CSV it is me, right, is the photos, like the shoebox and like the actual physical form, it doesn't actually capture that, right? It doesn't actually capture most of the social things that we do. And so I'm curious if anyone else has any thoughts about that, because that's something that we gain so much of, right? When we make everything digital in the immediate, it's actually really fantastic, right? Everything's fast, everything is easy to share and whatnot. And when you like sort of capture this in amber at a certain moment, you cut it off from all the social interactions. And Kevin, do you have something to say about that?
I can wait until you're done.
No, I'm good. Please, I want people to talk and yell and
I was just going to say that about 4 years ago, I became a vinyl record person.
Okay.
Which is an area of the music industry that is growing, ironically enough. And most people attribute it to some degree to people want a tactile experience with music in a world that where we are awash with digital experiences of music. Almost everybody who has a vinyl record collection now, particularly if it began recently, they are not simply these are records I have purchased. They are almost guaranteed to be made up of these are records I have purchased, also records I have found, also records that I have inherited from someone else who disowned them. So my record collection is this omelet of things that I've bought and things that I've inherited from people who no longer wanted physical records.
Right.
And so my history is now an omelet of a lot of other people's histories.
And wrapped up in these physical objects.
Now I feel like when I die, my descendants, whoever they are going to be able to look at that record collection and get a pretty good snapshot of some part of me.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm also convinced that two things. One, whoever chooses to capture their memories in this way must live in a place where real estate is not at a premium. Because I live in an 1,100 square foot apartment in San Francisco, and I don't have whole rooms to devote to record collections.
But it does make you actually pick your battles, right? I mean, it does make you actually choose what makes the most, what is like the most special.
Yes, my wife would say no, but that is absolutely true. It does make me say, I may not have the shelf space to buy this, even though I'd like to have it. Also, I feel like, I feel like the fact that this is now how I consume that mode of culture influences the choices I make as to what I consume.
Okay.
I will purchase a record. Most new records now have a digital download card. But I usually will purchase a record, and that is one kind of listening experience, but listening on an iPod is my primary experience. And so I will skip tracks that I know won't play well on an iPod.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if the track is an interstitial between two other tracks, that's going to be out of context on an iPod and isn't going to mean anything to me. So the fact that my listening is now split between a digital and a physical format influences what I listen to.
That's interesting.
And I wonder if that's true for anyone or true for other mediums as well.
Well, there's an interesting thing that you mentioned there, and you mentioned your descendants and inheriting this body, right? I saw this very interesting tweet a little while ago of somebody, this is going to be terrible because I'm going to get it wrong and I'm not going to be able to attribute it to them. So I apologize to Twitter and whoever it was, but they were talking about their Kindle library, and they were saying, you know, when I pass on, I'm going to say, or when, you know, as I'm dying on my deathbed, I'm going to tell my kids, like, well, son, you don't have the license to read my books. And that's a really interesting thing about everything with digital. You know, like, we talk a lot about maintaining your photos, maintaining your digital self and your photo library, and even with services, you know, some services you're like, well, I pay them every month, and so it's a service, and like I'm pretty sure they're going to be around as long as they stay profitable. And I always say, okay, so what happens when you die? Right, which is a fairly depressing thought, but at the same time, you're like, I'm going to die at some point, and then my credit card's going to probably get shut off. And, you know, unless I, like, have in my will everyone's username and password to all of my services, that thing will probably end up going away. My friend was actually looking for a photo on Flickr, and he knew it was on Flickr, and he knew it was in somebody's Flickr stream, but it was beyond the, like, 250 photos or however many photos that you can see, 200 photos, I think, in Flickr that you can see with a free account, right? Like, Flickr has this notion of you upload photos and they just go sequentially, and then if you have a free account, the ones after 200 photos back, they just drop off. So if you have the URL, you can still get it, but you can't actually see them in the feed. And so he knew it was in this feed somewhere, but he couldn't get it. And then he finally, like, tracked down he did a little more investigating. He said, why can't I get this? Like, you know, can we re-up this account so I can get back through this whole thing? Oh, right. The guy whose Flickr account it was, he died. And so nobody's paying for this account anymore, which is this really interesting thing that's left behind, right, where you only have a bit of it or maybe none of it at all. And so that's something that I think we also have to think about is, you know, in the immediate term, this stuff is great. But in the long term, what actually ends up happening to the things that you put online and the things and the services that you're paying for?
A lot of what you're talking about is migration or digital archives.
Right. And so this actually, I have a slide in here, which is actually very interesting. So this is from Brewster Kahle, who runs the Internet Archive. The interesting thing is the Internet Archive, this like thing, that's like this organization has the word internet in it. They're actually doing this physical archive as well. So everything, every book that they're scanning and every piece of media that they're scanning, they're actually keeping a physical copy of it as well, which I just thought was kind of interesting as a component of all of this. And you're right. I mean, a lot of this has to do with digital archiving. I'm talking a little bit outside the scope of digital archiving, mostly because I think that there is really good stuff happening with digital archiving. I still think that still this notion of, like, I can save everything, right? Maybe I can, but, like, that might be totally useless, because if I'm saving everything, I probably have nothing that I'm actually going to go through and look at or discover or anything like that. And that said, there are services like TimeHop, which is very cool. I don't know if you guys are familiar with TimeHop. Which is, for those of you who don't know, it's this cool service that hooks up to different social media, Facebook, I think, probably Flickr, Instagram, maybe, and they'll resurface memories for you over time, and they'll email them to you, which is cool. But at the same time, again, you know, it's relying on TimeHop to sort of bring forth nostalgia and bring forth these memories for you.
So in addition to physical media becoming obsolete and hard drives dying and cloud storage either being acquired or companies going out of business, mm-hmm. You have the other problem of file formats. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Kodak used to make a camera in 99 or 2000 that saved hierarchical photos at different resolutions, uh-huh. The idea being that you could email one quickly or print another one quickly, whatever. I don't even remember the name of it, much less how to decode it anymore. And you have that problem very much. And look how many people shoot in RAW now. What's the chance that those formats will be readable? So has anyone, to your knowledge, solved the problem of how to archive the software that goes along with these formats so that if you have the, let's say you do have the bits, you're mm-hmm. fortunate enough to have the bits to make sure that you can read them?
What I do know is, so I'm not an expert in you know, digital archiving, so I don't know if anyone in here does know. What I do know is that a lot of times what ends up happening is that there is, you know, a guy who maintains a computer from like the mid-90s, and it's still running this software, and it's never been upgraded, and it's running whatever version of like Windows 3.1 that can read this thing, and they just have to keep it up and running, and over time it just gets to be a very expensive problem where you have to find that one person or that one shop that still has this one computer and to do this. I was talking about this with a friend of mine, and we were talking about it in terms of digital art. Because digital art, a lot of times, there was digital art made for Netscape in like the mid-90s. And it's intended to run on like Netscape on a Windows box in the mid-90s. And so you just can't run it on modern browsers at all. And so in order to have to, and this is a piece of art, so in order to actually experience this art again, you not only need the browser, and you not only need the OS, but you also need the hardware that runs on. And in fact, you probably need to run it on a CRT because it doesn't actually work properly if you're looking at it on an LCD screen. And again, I keep coming back to, I don't think that this is necessarily, again, like, it's not that digital things are bad and physical things are good and, like, you know, we should just, like, print out everything. But I do keep coming back to this idea that I picked up this photo in a dusty box in the middle of London, and it still looks like exactly the same as it did, maybe like slightly yellowed. But I didn't need to get a new pair of like decoding eyeballs in order to look at this photo, right? I can just look at the photo, and you know, if I were to hold it up like this, it sort of looks the way that the world did, only probably in black and white.
Although I should probably play devil's advocate for a second,
please,
because no one has pushed back.
Yeah,
celluloid decomposes.
Yes,
prints fade.
They do.
Fire, flood,
mm-hmm.
etc. So there's no real insurance in only a single copy of any physical object.
True.
And most of us don't have the luxury of storing our negatives in salt mines like,
right,
like prints are today. And
right,
you come back, and Lucas talks about just restoring Star Wars. Only 30 years later, they were, you know, almost to the point of unsalvageable.
Right.
So
it's interesting, right? The other interesting piece of it is, you know, so I printed out these photos, and it's a nice little gimmick. I don't actually, you know, these are probably all like inkjet photos from Walgreens, and so they definitely don't. They probably don't have the persistence that even photos that were taken 100 years ago that are like silver on paper have. And that's really interesting. We know how to preserve. The thing I would say is that you're right. Like there is that point of view that says, you know, your shoebox catches on fire and you're pretty much screwed anyway. But at the same time, we kind of know how to deal with paper, right? We've been dealing with paper for thousands of years. We know what to do. It's like, even if you get it wet, you kind of know how to like blot it off. And even if like you, the corner of it tears and like it catches on fire, you get a sense of what's going on. If your hard drive gets a little wet, like you're kind of screwed. Again, like this isn't a like, you know, anti-digital, like this is bad, but a lot of it to me is this question of curation and this question of like, I think that there's a place for everything. And I think that there is, on the one hand, there are the things, you know, like digital is great, we should be worried about backing up. Like I have a Drobo at home that, you know, has like redundant drives, and I upload stuff to my cloud backup system. I do all this stuff because, yeah, it would be pretty devastating if my photos went away. At the same time, though, you know, I've just printed out these photos and I'm scattering around this room, and like, okay, you know, somebody has a copy of this somewhere, and who knows, maybe it'll surface in like 50 years, and that it's kind of interesting and just in itself.
When you talk about curation, you're really sort of limited to reducing
right, in a way that you don't, yeah, and you don't, there, you're talking about this migration problem, and you don't really have this migration problem when the thing that you have is the final format, or is the final form, or like a sort of a human decodable form.
Yeah, but there, I guess there are no tools that kind of things from a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago,
digitally.
Yeah.
Right, and oh, right. So, yeah. And so, right, a lot of it is, right, that's also an important point, that even if we're talking about keeping everything digital, right, and even, and this is sort of more, this is relevant even if you don't care about digital photography at all, is this notion that if you do end up reducing things to down to, like, the most important components of your life, it makes it much easier to just to have this, like, easily digestible digital bundle, rather than, you know, anything else.
Yeah, I think this conversation can go lots of different ways. You know, like,
yeah,
you know, like, you know, digital sucks or cloud sucks or whatever. And there's lots of ways we can go. But I think there's a really, to me, what I'd like to kind of maybe challenge you on is,
yeah,
is what's the psychological insight here that lets us kind of maybe move forward? So,
uh-huh,
for example, I would say that digital is kind of like crack cocaine.
Okay.
And analog printouts are like hard work.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And I think, and that's the problem, right? The problem is that my dad maintained photo albums. I maintain photo albums, but I get a year behind and I feel guilty, right? Because it's so much work.
Yeah.
When I do it, I have something. And the kids have strict rules that when there's a fire, you get those first, right? Because so we've built.
Is that actually a rule that you have?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My dad gave it that rule to me. I passed it on to my kids. And yeah, so this, I think that to me, as a UX designer, the way I would approach this is I saying, what's the human motivation? What's the issue? And I'm stunned by my friends who have their new iPhone camera, and they literally take thousands of pictures a month.
Yeah.
And they don't curate in any way. And when I ask them about it, they kind of laugh it off like, well, I got it. It's no big deal. And I'm like, you're going to be in so much pain in 5 years. And so to me, it's like it's crack cocaine. Of course they're not going to do it.
Right.
Do we need to talk about a system, a recommendation system, an iPhoto on steroids that says, here's the 4,000 pictures you took, and guess what? There's 30 of your kids smiling here.
Right.
You probably want this one. And or even the ability to – so maybe we need tools to kind of make it easier to curate.
I think that's actually – I think that's absolutely true. This notion of the sort of analog versus digital – argument is really just a foundation, because I think that's absolutely right. We're not going to go back, right? We're not going to say, okay, you know what, this whole digital thing didn't really work out. Let's just go back to the way we were doing things before. I think that there's this great opportunity for us now to look at what it is that we're building and say, okay, How do we impose this on people? How do we tell people, how do we encourage people to curate? Basically, how do we encourage people to do this pretty much by accident? How do we encourage people to kind of serve themselves in the best way that they can, whether or not they actually know it, right? Because, you know, because like you said, your friends will take thousands of photos, and they won't actually consider the implications of it. They don't have the, you know, the what happens if my iPhone catches on fire plan. And so if you just do it as a matter of course in the software that we're designing or in the services that we're running, I don't necessarily mean to impose artificial limitations on the software, but maybe we encourage people to think about things as like, what is the best? What is the thing that we want to save? And maybe not even the best. You know, it's always the interesting story of like, okay, well, the example of this is the one of your kids smiling, and this you probably want this one. But it's entirely possible that it's like the blurry one of your kid's foot that's actually the best, because that's the one that they picked up the camera and took the picture themselves, right? And like, it's going to be very difficult to algorithmically like determine that. And so including in the services that we design and in the systems that we build, this notion of like, what is the most meaningful piece of this to you, I think is important.
Like, we've been talking about how the actual photos like will like provide like an insight into like what life was like and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I recently like digitized all my old photos.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have to decide which prints I actually need to throw out, because I want to need to curate them myself, and
right.
I don't want to throw them all out.
Don't throw them out.
But but I realized when I did that like I had some photos from like my 8th grade field day, and if I took that photo and wrote on the back like May 1996, and someone found it in a box 100 years later, they'd be like, okay, cool, it's some kids playing tug of war or something. But I think what's more valuable are the memories of the people that are directly involved. Because now I can take this photo, upload it to Facebook, and tag all my friends in it. And that'll help them remember the day. Because I never even show these photos to anyone except myself in the first place, and now
right.
I can. And even if Facebook disappears and that photo is gone, all those people will now have like invigorated memories of the event that they can share. And I think that's even more valuable than just the physical photo itself for anyone in the future to see. Personally,
I got nothing. Anybody?
Just an emotional connection to a moment. Strongest with the people that felt it, but you can get a sense of that emotion by looking at the past. So if find that photo 100 years later, for example, you know that that was a happy moment or not in someone's life. And it's interesting to look back upon that even though you're not emotionally invested within it.
And there's this interesting question about that, right? If you're looking at other people's memories, if you're looking at other people's moments, I would argue, I don't actually have a particularly good reason other than I think it's important to look at the past every once in a while, but I would argue that just looking at these moments and having a record of these moments, simply having them and being able to re-experience them is useful. It would be interesting to sort of think about the ways, and you know what I would encourage everyone to do is to think about the ways that you can capture that, you know, this idea, you know, without getting too far down this, because I don't think the answer is like open data, right? Like that's maybe a component of it, but we should be thinking about how do we do both, right? How do we both capture these moments? How do we both say we had this, we can persist this for 50 years, 100 years, but still also say, and these are all the people in it, and this is why this was important, right? The question at that point is, if you had that photo, this is a lot, you know, again, to the point about, hard work versus crack, I guess. If you would interestingly get a similar experience printing out that photo 5 times, writing on the back of it, hey, remember field day, and sending it to your friends, right? It's just a lot of work. And I don't think that that's necessarily the right answer, but I also do know that when I go on vacation these days, I continue to send postcards. I don't send emails, but I take photos and I print out those photos and I send them as postcards back to my friends and I say, like, I was doing this and I cared about it and I thought that you would like this image because, and I write it on the back of it. And now I have this, like, you know, tangible object from that particular moment that has both context and persistence. So, I mean, but you're right. I mean, like, I also do find a lot of value in the you know, like, the comments on my Flickr feed and the comments on Facebook. And, you know, the question is, how do we actually find that balance between those two things?
I'm actually in the early stages of creating a site that allows people to upload and share their memories so that they're available for future generations. Mm-hmm. And it's not just photo. It also includes, you know, video, text, whatever people are most comfortable with. Mm-hmm. But a problem that I'm facing is people like my dad saying, you know, well, how do I know that, like, it's going to be available
right
in, you know, 4 generations from now? So, you know, there's kind of this challenge, I think, especially for, you know, companies now and future that are trying to incorporate some sort of an upload element that needs to live somewhere
right
for an extended period of time. You know, how do we do that? And how do we reassure people that there really is, you know, so that we're not a GeoCities or someone that goes
right
out of business 20 years from now and everyone's stuff is lost.
So what did you come up with?
Nothing so far. I was going to see if anyone had any other suggestions for, you know, how to tell people that, I mean, this is what's going on now, but I can't predict the future, obviously, and can't make any guarantees per se, but...
Right.
Well, not be a jerk, but how can you possibly promise that?
Right, and that's what
I'm... So you don't reassure them, you will lie to them. Right? You cannot reassure them on something that you cannot prove.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you have an impossible problem.
Right, and I mean that was, but people still ask the question, so you know it's still one of those things that.
Right. And actually, it's sort of, I find it actually very heartening that people are asking you these questions, right? And they're not just being like, "Oh, sweet, I found the place that'll store my digital archives forever. I'm set. I don't have to worry about it anymore." Mm-hmm. So it is nice that people are thinking about it. I mean, all I would probably say in this case is to think about it, to not lie to people, but to build into the system this idea that we might not be around, but these are the things that we have in place to make sure that we're not going to sell you out.
Mm-hmm.
Those
And I would also say, like, one of the things I would say that would be most important is if you're really serious about that, right, if you're really serious about this, like, make sure that in the, like, in your, like, the company bylaws or in the operating agreement or whatnot, it says, like, we will not sell to a company that's going to shut us down, or in the terms of whatever it is that our deal is going to be when we sell our company, it will be, you have to maintain this crap for 50 years or whatever it happens to be, right? Like, whatever your particular promise is to your users. I don't know if that's something you could do, but that's ultimately the problem, right? Like, GeoCities is like, screw it, we just got, like, you know, $500 million. I don't care. Mm-hmm. So... I mean, maybe. I don't know how much it was.
So two completely unrelated thoughts.
Yeah. I would expect nothing less from you.
Oh, thanks. The first one is the joy of the tangible artifact. You know, discovering something that you've put away in a box, you buy at a flea market, or, you know, in my case, my jacket. I had a pocket, a ticket for an LA Lakers game I went to, and, you know, I put my jacket on, I come to South by, and there's that ticket, and I remember suddenly, oh, right, I went to that game, and I remember that night and everything about that. I think that's something that, you know, even as we look at digital stuff, you know, there's still... That's kind of the delineating difference between traditional analog stuff and digital stuff, is that joy of rediscovering things, like, we lose that. And the second comment really has to do with the idea of this archival, the whole archival aspect of the conversation. You know, that photograph from, what was it, 1928?
Yeah.
When it was taken, there was no concept that it was going to be around in 100 years. That wasn't the goal of it.
Right.
And the probability of that photograph being around in 500 years is really, really low.
Right.
I think we live in this particular era and time where the idea that digital is short-lived, you know, it's, we have a kind of a certain window of time in history where, you know, digital has a certain amnesia around it. But I suspect in 100 years from now that a digital photo will last forever, 1,000 years.
Possibly.
Whereas an analog photo won't last 1,000 years. So this conversation in 100 years won't be about preserving digital stuff. It'll be about preserving analog stuff.
Right, although we have to get there first, right?
Yeah, okay. Clearly, we have to get there. Yeah, I mean...
Right.
I mean, even analog can survive as digital within that state. The problem is that we currently think of permanence as tangible.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, there's these two different kind of conflicting things where it's like, well, the joy of the shoebox... is the tangible artifact.
Right.
Digital, whether archived or not, doesn't have that joy.
Right.
So how do you, you know, these two different, there's just two different threads there. So.
And there's this other fear, too, of, like, you know, you talk about the joy that comes from it. I always have this fear of, like, you know, ending up fetishizing the physical objects as well, right? Like,
physical objects are wonderful.
They are wonderful, you know.
It's really hard to fetishize a digital file.
Like, you're not going to pass on your hard drive.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I should mention that I worked at Flickr for about 1,000 years.
Oh, nice. Do you have photos from the beginning of that?
I have two comments. I want to come back to the idea of replicating stuff across services.
Yeah.
And say unequivocally, it's madness, can't work. And there's a simple reason. I mean, it will work for public photos. Everyone talks about the mythical backup of Flickr, especially now. And there's one way to do it, and that is to swallow the service whole. The only other way to do it is to run roughshod over the privacy settings. Right? You cannot do it ethically. You have to take the whole thing.
You're talking specifically, so what is this?
Specifically about Flickr. In the
right, right. But I mean, for people who aren't familiar, like, if you're talking about this mythical backup...
At Flickr, we took privacy seriously, which means that there are a lot of not public photos up there, which means, you know, people talk about the social graph, and all the social graph is, aside from a loathsome term, is a delegation of trust, right? Like, you uploaded your photos, and you trusted me to make sure that I wouldn't show them to the wrong people.
Right.
And that's actually really important. The larger... So I've been working on a bunch of tools to archive stuff, and specifically to get away from... the problem of having just like a CSV file, because that's less than useless.
Right.
And in the process, you know, one of the things that we didn't do that we probably should have given our leverage was encourage people, was really to force the issue of individuals' responsibilities to back up their own stuff.
Right.
And that's actually, it's typically assumed to be a sign of weakness as a business. I don't think it is. We were pretty confident we could compete on features. But I do think there is, it cuts both ways. It's up to individuals to actually make the effort to say some of this stuff. So cool. That's all I'd say.
Great. Thanks.
I just had a few thoughts I thought were interesting. When you look at like 1900 photos from 1900, there's a lot more people in the world now. So not only are people saving a lot more information, there's a lot more people saving information. So a historian looking at 1900, there were like under 2 billion people. Now there's like 7 billion people. Soon there'll be 8 billion people. In like 1800, there was less than a billion people. Uh-huh. And the human mind hasn't changed. So understanding the past will be different. And I also think it's interesting to think about why we're doing this. Is it so that in the future we can ensure our happiness if we're...
By this, you mean this?
Why are we saving things? Why do we want memories? Is it so that we can preserve our legacy in the future? Is it altruistic so we can help future historians? Is it maybe we're worried that we'll be unhappy in the future and we'll want to remember happy memories? Or maybe it's just a way of socializing in the present and none of this sharing matters. But the reason why we save all this stuff, I think, matters. And I think for how you save it. And it's also interesting to point out that the quality of saving memories is improving. We didn't have video back. And at some point, maybe we'll be able to, you know, remember sense and and touch and remember that, like, people are in color and they're not just orange and brown.
Right. So I think we're pretty much out of time here. So I would just say, you know, thank you very much for this conversation. I think it's, you know, particularly interesting. And you know, I would just leave you with this idea of, like, you know, what can we all do, again, like, to, as businesses, as individuals, to take responsibility for our memories and to help the people around us and the people that we're, you know, we're responsible for, to make sure that they actually, you know, can keep their stuff around for 100 years, and that we could end up with, you know, our version of this guy 100 years from now. So thank you very much. Oh, yeah? We have a few more minutes.
We have about 5 minutes left. Do you have recommendations? I mean, what are you doing to address this yourself?
Yeah, I don't really know. No, I do. I mean, I would say that there are a couple of things. I take my digital backups very seriously. I'm going to talk a little bit more, because you're right. We do have a few more minutes. So I actually, you know, Jeff, do you go over there and do that? That's okay. But that's actually a really good question. You know, I take my digital backups very seriously, you know, on a personal level. And I do still print out stuff, and I do print out photo books, and I'm mostly, more than anything else, I'm just aware of what it is that I'm doing. So when I put photos up on Twitter, and when I put photos up, you know, sort of in the social sharing, like using photos to communicate a story at a particular moment, I'm aware of, like, the fact that this thing might go away. And, you know, I make sure that these are photos I don't really care too much about. Or if I do care about them, that I make sure I save them. And I think that more than anything else, it's this idea of, like, an awareness, right? It's an awareness going into whatever it is that you're doing of what it is that's going on, right? That you say, I know that when I take this photo on my cell phone, if I don't do something with it, whether it's print it out or put it online or put it on my hard drive or whatever else, and it might go away, and, like, being comfortable with that, which is probably not a very satisfactory answer, but it is sort of, you know, I think that more than anything else, if you're, like, honestly, if you're cool with, like, everything just going away, that's actually fine, right? Like, not everyone forever took photos, and not everyone saved their memories from their day-to-day. Like, you can just live your life and not leave a trail behind. But the mistake would be to expect that you're leaving a trail behind, but not actually be doing it. So that would be what I would say about that.
Just interestingly, that whole phenomenon of capturing our lives, capturing our families' lives, that's an invention, actually, of the last 50 or 60 years.
Sure.
Thanks to Kodak, actually, popularized the notion that it's not just professionals who do it.
Right.
But that families families can do it, and more importantly, mom, the chief memory officer, has an obligation as a good mom to be taking on that role.
Do we think that's a good thing or a bad thing? Or it's just a thing?
Signed up for it, but there it is. You know, she's expected to keep the kids' artwork from kindergarten, document first
right.
steps, birthday parties, and whatnot. And it's immensely stressful now in this era for all the reasons you
right.
described.
Did you have... Sorry, can you speak up?
Would be assuming that you're leading a trail and then realizing that you can't.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's also some ethical concerns with what about if you didn't want to leave a trail and now somebody else, because you were famous or something, wants to create a trail and mm-hmm. trace your records. I think, I don't know, you said you were from New York, so I don't know if you saw the presentation at NYPL or NYPL inherited a bunch of Jonathan Larson's old floppies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they were trying to extract the data, and I don't remember all the technical details. I think they were using a Basilisk emulator to get it off of the floppies. But they discovered that in rendering it on the new emulated system, that you could read previous drafts.
Right. Like they was rereading all the autosaves.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Do you not want your legacy to be that you saved the draft six times and edited it? Maybe it was a personal message, but I mean, to what extent are we going to protect people's privacy and what's the ethics behind that, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's A, very interesting, and B, like a totally different. I think there's probably a panel on that, so, right, like happening right now. Yeah.